Hi everyone, it's Jason, host of Curious Goldfish. We will get to the episode in a matter of moments, but I wanted to say a couple of things before we dive in. First, thank you for listening. I launched this podcast in early 2024 with absolutely no clue about where it was going to go. But I so appreciate the encouragement of the artists I've had the honor of meeting, and by so many of you out there who have listened and given me your valuable time. If you are joining for the first time because you love the artist I'm featuring, I'm so glad you are here, and I encourage you to do a couple of things if you don't mind. First, take a listen to some of my previous episodes. I love them all, but if you want to be inspired by a Grammy winner who ended up losing everything to addiction, listen to the conversation with Gary Nichols. He's on his way back, and he tells us all about it. If you want to hear how a country music star is recreating herself in her mid-50s, listen to the Kelly Willis episode. If you want to hear about an artist who is a master of the art of the hustle, who also happens to be legally blind, jump into the conversation I had with Wyatt Edmondson. These are just a few examples of the unique stories the artists have shared, and I'm grateful to be a part of their conversation. Please follow, download, and subscribe to Curious Goldfish on all major podcast platforms. And I just launched a YouTube channel. I will be posting all sorts of content there from now on. Secondly, share with a friend who is passionate about music. This is a passion project for me on nights and weekends. Curious Goldfish is a music podcast about more than music. Encourage your friends to follow me on Instagram and on that YouTube channel @CuriousGoldfishPodcast. Together, let's share the stories of these amazing artists and the struggles and experiences that inspire them. Thanks again. Remember, don't just be a goldfish, be a curious one. Now for the episode.
But yeah, just that, I don't know. Stuff like that, I feel like, happens to me often, though. Like, where just the weirdest coincidences happen. And it's to a point now where I have to really believe, like, the law of attraction is very real. Being somewhat grounded and stuff, it's still pretty nuts to watch the stuff unfold. Like, every time, it never gets old to me, and I never take it for granted. Because it's like, I'll meet Gasparilla people in Colorado, and then I'm just like, dude, what the hell? Like, that's so cool. Yeah, and so I just kind of stay in a state of like, what happens next? Like, you know, like cliffhanger.
Welcome to Curious Goldfish, a podcast community where music and curiosity come together through interesting conversations with the music makers of our world. I'm your host, Jason English. You can find Curious Goldfish in all the major podcast and social media platforms. And of course, we have all of our content on our website, CuriousGoldfish.com. You might think this episode of the podcast has pivoted to a tribute of some of the classic songs from the 1990s, leading off with Dreams by the Cranberries. Released in 1992, this song represents my favorite memories of my college years in the Midwest. But this isn't an episode about that, and it's not an episode about the Cranberries. Instead, it's a celebration of 20-something singer-songwriter Kat Ridgway, performing a staple from her live shows. A thunderous cover of a classic that builds on itself throughout the duration of the song until the penultimate climax, where she layers loop upon loop of her own vocals to a resounding finish. If you had your eyes closed, you'd make yourself believe you were listening to a choir of angels, but it's just her and a live looping machine that would cause Ed Sheeran to do a double take. Listen for yourself.
Yeah.
But there's more to Kat Ridgway than covers. She's achieved modest success on radio and Americana charts with the song Giving You Up, and has collaborated with artists like Sean Mullins, where they co-wrote and co-performed a song called Give Me Love. To spend time with Kat is to smile, laugh, and have a renewed sense of joy about life and the state of music, a refreshing change of pace that contradicts a time when sad girl songs are all the rage. If you have a chance to see her perform live, her vocals will punch you in your gut, but you will head home infused by an infectious happiness after she manages to sing your sorrows away. She's finalizing a new album set to release later this year. We talk about that, her Dream Festival lineup, her time in Colorado this past winter, and everything in between. And there's a crazy Grateful Dead connection that was instrumental to her career as a musician. Here's Kat Ridgway from Orlando, Florida. Let's dive in. Hey, Kat Ridgway.
Oh, hey.
Thanks for joining the show.
Man, thanks for having me.
So I know you're from Orlando, and I know you have a huge following in Orlando, but if you were to start a fan club, I think your first chapter might be Roswell, Georgia. Right?
I believe that wholeheartedly. Y'all have been so great to us. It's kind of insane.
Yeah, a lot of us have come to know you through the 30A festival down at 30A in Florida.
Yeah.
But yeah, and yesterday you were here at the Roswell Music Festival, and that was intentional. The people that put on the show love you and wanted to include you. So yeah, you have a big following here.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. Like, y'all have no idea. It's so cool to meet people and have dots connect from different places too. Like, yeah. That's one of the most fun parts of having a music career, actually. When you're not on stage, it's just people you meet and then all these weird coincidences align, and it happens so frequently. It's so weird.
That's neat.
Yeah.
I think that's the amazing part about music.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah.
The great connector, for sure.
Yeah. No, that's great. So the Roswell Music Festival yesterday, do you do a lot of festivals in the summer?
Yeah, we've done a lot actually in the past few years, a handful of festivals. Actually, I think it was 2 years ago, we got up to Philadelphia for the first time and played Philly Folk Fest on my birthday. So that was cool.
That's neat.
Yeah, so that was in August. It was hot. But yeah, we've definitely started playing more festivals in the past couple of years. And that's something I wanted to get into because festivals are just fun.
Yeah.
They're like, everyone's in a great mood. It's usually like a quick set. It's like wham, bam, boom, done. And then you get to just hang out and hear a bunch of other people play. Because, I don't know, as a gigging musician, like someone who does this as a job, so much of the time you don't have the chance to see other people play or go see your friends play and stuff. Yeah. So if you end up on a bill with people that you love or know, it's so much fun. So yeah, it's cool.
All right. Well, great job yesterday. The weather was great for the most part. So speaking of festivals, I guess if you had to draw up a lineup, four bands, it doesn't have to be rhyme or reason to it, but like if you had to put a lineup together, what would those bands look like? Who would open, and what's the order?
Oh man. Okay, well first I think we need to pick who the bands are going to be, and then we can order them. So first off the bat, one of the live shows I have thought about the most in the past couple of years has been an act called Dijon. Have you heard of Dijon?
No. Uh-uh.
So they were one of the supporting acts for Bon Iver's last tour. And this dude is like if Bon Iver had a baby with Frank Ocean mixed with some other something. I don't know. There's a very nice je ne sais quoi he has. But it's like it's very artsy. There's like definitely R&B elements, but it's very indie in the tonality of it. I love that guy. I think he's so cool.
Okay.
And the show was just so sick. Like I haven't believed a vocalist as much as Dijon in a long time. I also am a huge fan of Pine Grove and Big Thief. That kind of like alternative folk thing that's really hitting right now.
Okay.
I'm into it. Okay. I'm all about it. I love Adrienne Linker's writing. I think she's one of the most prolific people, and just insane lyricist. Who else? This is so hard. This is really hard. Another act I'm thinking about is Sylvanesso. You know Tall Tall Trees.
No, I need to check these bands
out. Okay, I'm not just saying this to say this, but Tall Tall Trees is actually my co-producer on my new record. But the reason we started working together was because I saw him play live and I was like, this man is special. And I became a diehard after watching him play like two songs. He plays banjo. It's like psychedelic banjo. Okay. And then he loops all of this stuff and like plays the banjo with a fiddle bow. He's smacking it with a mallet. He's using every sound you can get out of that thing. And it is just, he's freaking magic. So I would totally put Tall Tall Trees on this list.
All
right. So yeah, I think we kind of ended up in like a little bit of like an indie rock folk bill here.
Yeah, where's this festival at, by the way? Like,
it feels like Eastern a Lake Michigan thing, right, or something. I don't know. I've never been there, but it feels right.
It's kind of random.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't know. It just feels like the place.
Especially if you've never been there.
I know. Well, my bandmates and I have this running joke where like if someone says something, we'll be like, I don't know, like ceramic vase, an art rock duo from like New York City or
just
something.
Pick an object.
Yeah, yeah. You just like, or like if you're in the middle of a conversation and someone says something, like we'll just stop and repeat the thing and try to figure out what the band would be and where they're from. And it's just, I don't know, it's just been this thing for years.
That's a great road trip game.
It's the best.
Yeah.
And like, but we do it all the time. Like, it doesn't matter if we're on the road or not. But anyway, that's what that just made me think of. Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, Lake Michigan feels like a place that we would have just been like, yeah, so lake, this, you know, like.
Are you in the middle of the lake? Are you next to the lake?
We're in the lake. You're in the lake. Yeah, in the lake. No electronics allowed. You know, or maybe they are. That's Dijon for you.
Yeah. So the Lake Michigan indie alternative, is that what you said? Indie,
yeah, it's like folky indie alternative stuff. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Awesome.
But would you name it? What would you name this festival? Do you know those bands?
I'm excited to.
Oh
yeah, I'm excited
my
to,
god!
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah. No.
Those
thank
are good
you.
Ones.
Yeah. No,
yeah.
Thank you.
Oh man, it's early for me still. My eyes are just watering. I'm like, we weren't ready. We're so excited about this festival we built. It's just beautiful.
That's awesome. All right. Well, so you're from Orlando, but you spent the better part of the last year, or not maybe not the whole year, but a few months in Colorado.
Yeah.
How did that come about? And what did a Florida girl think about?
It was freaking
the Rocky Mountains.
Sweet.
Yeah.
It was I love the cold.
Oh, really?
Which I feel like no one was expecting me to say that, but I truly do. I'm so burnt out from the heat down in Florida, pun intended. I can't do it no mo. It's too much. And like outdoor gigs in Florida in the summertime, no.
Yeah.
Just no. Like, why are we doing anything outside in Florida after like April? Let me know. But I had a family friend who has played out in the valley for decades see my band play actually a couple years ago when we were at Matilda's and
here in North Atlanta. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so he was like, yo, you would kill in Colorado. And I was like, cool. I have no idea what the music market is like out there, but if you say so, like I'm all about finding out if you're right. And he's like, would you want to go do a season out there? Because I'll make some calls. And I was like, sure. So one thing leads to another, but it ended up just not working out that year because it was just the season was too close. They already had people kind of slated for the roster that year. I had stuff on the band calendar I couldn't get out of. It just wasn't meant to be. So we play Matilda's again, and family friend comes back, and he's like, you know, I still think Colorado would be great for you. And I'm like, you know what? Let's do it. And we shook hands. And I was like, let's make this happen. He's like, all right, if you're serious, clear your schedule from Thanksgiving on through the rest of the year. Like, just don't book anything. Which, asking a like a working musician to do that is a huge Hail Mary.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know, I believe Ted Lasso. And I was like, I really do feel in my bones that this is going to happen. I don't know how or why, but sure. And dude, it took up until about 3 weeks before I left for everything to fall into place, it did. And I was sweating, but it ended up working out. And I had two residencies out there. So I was playing at one really historic bar. It was one of the first bed and breakfasts ever built in Vail. And the owner, one of the owners, is still alive. Her name is Shaika. She's an 87-year-old Austrian woman. And
That's awesome. Yeah.
Working there was nuts. But she's credited for being one of the founders of the entire town of Vail. And so to play there is pretty nuts, especially to be the new kid on the block and walk into that place. It was pretty wild. So then from there, I also ended up playing over at the Hyatt in Beaver Creek. And so, I mean, I was at the base of three or four ski runs. I was at a lift just outside.
How many warm chocolate chip cookies did you eat?
Honestly, I'm gluten intolerant, so I only had two. But I did. Yeah. I still did it.
That's That's a thing out there for sure.
Oh yeah. We actually got they tried to enlist us to me and my roommate to be holiday help is what they call it, and you dress up like a chef and hand out the cookies. And I was like, I wish I had the free time to come hand out cookies and just be this bearer of joy, but I was playing 5+ days a week. I was hustling. It was insane. I don't think I've ever worked that hard for a period of time in my life.
Yeah, and during the winter time, right?
Yeah. And I was adjusting to the altitude and the lack of humidity.
Yeah.
And at Pepe's, I mean, the gig is a 4-hour a night minimum, and I was playing upwards of 4 hours every night. So there were days in a row where I was singing 5-6 hours at a time. And I had to completely reconstruct how I sing to get through those gigs. But it made me a better vocalist, honestly. 10,000 hours happened in one season, man. It was crazy. It was a very, very, very interesting experience. I learned how to deal with a lot of drunk people for the first time too. And I also had no idea, but most of the visitors who come through Vail are from Mexico. And so,
interesting, yeah.
Right. And yeah. I was like, it kind of makes sense when you think about the proximity, but at the same time, that just never even crossed my mind.
Yeah.
And so I get there and I made friends with a lot of the staff that worked at this place, and they're from all over South America.
Okay.
And, so I got to practice my Spanish a little bit, and they gave me a handful of songs, and I learned 5 songs in Spanish. And man, me and the Mexicans, we had a party every night. It was so much fun, and it gave me so much more of an appreciation for the culture. I've always thought Latin culture as a whole is just beautiful. But then to see how they connect to music and how they're dancing and just singing with their full chest to a song they know. It was just so fun. I love them. And I had so much tequila. Way more than I normally would.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, if you were doing your gigs in Breckenridge, everybody would be from Texas.
I believe that. I do. You know, it's funny. In Vail, people call the people who go to Breckenridge Brecken Bros, because it's a lot snowboard heavier out there, which I snowboard. So I was like, get me out. I want to go to Breck. It's been a long time since I've been out there. I think my family took a trip there one time when we were little, but the altitude, again, it just slaps you when you're from sea level. It's woohoo. Yeah. Account for 3 or 4 days to get adjusted before you try to do something physical. Seriously.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So with that, I'm sure that was a new audience for you. Did any cool connections come out of that?
Yeah. It was really wild,
some
of the stuff. One time I was out playing where I'm at the ski lift, and a lady came off of the mountain and comes over to me, and she goes, "Is your name Kat?" And I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "Dude, I don't know how, but I know your music." And she pulls her phone up, and she had 4 of my songs saved to her phone. And she's like, "I can't believe you're playing here." And I was like, "I can't believe you know who I am. What is this?" And she was like, "Dude, this is so so cool. And so she's just sitting there with her skis hanging out for like the next hour. And that was just wild. But as far as like industry connections go, this one takes the cake for me. So there's a really cool music festival that happens every year in Tampa, Florida, and it's called Gasparilla.
Okay.
I've wanted to play it for years, but I just straight up did not know the people behind it. And I had asked around, but just different circles of people, you know? So I'm playing at this same place, and I mentioned on stage that I'm from Florida. And so I get off stage and this couple comes up and they're like, "Hey, did you say you were from Florida? Are you from Tampa?" And I was like, "No, I'm from Orlando." They're like, "Oh, cool." And so we kind of just talk Florida for a sec, and then they go there, wherever they were headed to. I'm packing up all my gear. I have all my stuff on a luggage cart because I'm playing at the hotel, you know, right. And I'm wheeling all my stuff to the car. It took me way longer than it should have to load up that day because I kept getting held up with some stuff. So I'm like, wow, I'm really behind schedule. I had nowhere to be, so it wasn't a problem, but I was just, you know, my timeline was extended. So I'm putting all my stuff in my car and this couple walks up behind me again and I'm like, hello. And they're like, "Hey, so wait, you said you weren't from Tampa." I was like, "Correct." And they're like, "That's so crazy. Have you ever played Gasparilla though?" And I was like, "Ha, no." And I was like, I really want to though. And they were like, "Oh, really?" And I'm like, "Yeah, why?" And they're like, "That's actually really funny. We're like best friends with the owner of the festival."
Oh, jeez.
And I was like, "What?" And I was like, I cannot make this stuff up, man. Jeez. And I'm like, "Are you serious?" And so they're like, "Yeah, give us your number and stuff." So I do. And they're like, "We'll connect you." And I mean, I've met people before who say they're going to connect you and stuff. Yeah. And it usually kind of fizzles out or they put you in touch and the person never gets back in touch with you, you know, whatever, you know how it goes. And so I'm not expecting anything. And they put us in a group chat that night. Dude answers me. I end up in Tampa like first week I'm back home, as like a little side festival that they do. And now we're like in contact doing a bunch more stuff together. So, I mean, there has been no mention of Gasparilla yet. Give me some time. but I just thought it was just wild that I had mentioned that I really wanted to play that before I went out to Colorado. And that was like one of the main things I was trying to work on in Florida. And then poof, it's just there. And it's
in Colorado.
Yeah, in Colorado. Like I had to go all the way out here to do something in my home state. Wild. But yeah, just that I don't know. Stuff like that I feel like happens to me often though. Like where just the weirdest coincidences happen. And it's to a point now where I have to really believe like the law of attraction is very real.
No, well, it's your intention too.
Yeah.
And like for someone like you that, you know, I don't really know you, but I've seen you perform quite a bit. Like you're so authentic and genuine.
Aww, thanks.
And just like a lovely person.
Shucks.
Things will good things will happen. Right. I believe that.
Yeah. Thank you. I really appreciate that. But yeah, even with, being somewhat grounded and stuff, it's still pretty nuts to watch the stuff unfold. Like every time I'm like, it never gets old to me and I never take it for granted. Cause it's like, I'll meet Gasparilla people in Colorado. And then I'm just like, dude, what the hell? Like, that's so cool.
That's
And so I just kind of stay in a state of like, what happens next? Like, you know, like no, you cliffhanger.
Be open to it. Like, yeah. You know, cause you never know.
Yeah. It's man. It's so true. And that's the story of my whole career.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
But yeah, that was probably the craziest connection that happened in Colorado. The other one was actually the lady I was living with was the head of TEDx Vail. So like TED Talks. Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I got to be involved with some of the TED stuff that was happening out in Vail. So that was really cool too. Cause I grew up watching TED Talks and, that was actually before in a past life, before I was doing music full time when I was in college, I was actually studying biotechnology for a couple years.
Okay.
And I got into the field because of a TED Talk. I knew I wanted to go into STEM before I left it for the arts.
Right,
But yeah, it was just so weird to be connected to something that had altered my life in such a big way at that point. too.
All right.
So that was cool.
Well, speaking of, so that's, you just reminded me of something. So I'm in technology. It's my day job.
Yeah.
My old boss, one of my mentors, who I owe pretty much everything to, his name's Eric Berich. He gave a TED talk, gosh, six years ago. And it was all about why technology needs the arts.
Oh, that's cool.
And the humanities. And he, I think I'm getting this right, but he went to Cal Berkeley as an undergrad, and I think he studied Shakespeare.
Cool.
And he's incredible. Like, he's had this incredible career, founded this company, and ended up selling it to IBM. He's still in the industry, just a great guy. But like the TED talk is actually really cool because he ties the STEM stuff together with the arts. So I'll send you that link. Yeah. I'll send you the link.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always loved seeing the marriage of those two things. Cause I don't know, growing up in school, being an artsy person, but also science was my strongest subject. Like, I love science.
Wow.
Yeah. And I know it's like no one ever expects that from me, but I'm like, you know, man, I really love it. It was one of my favorite things. And like, even when I got to college, I was like tutoring chemistry and stuff. Like, I love how things work and seeing how stuff is all connected, you know? And I've always felt, in school anyway, it felt like you were kind of team left brain or team right brain. And I was always interested in finding the ways to see where they come together. And my brother actually, I think, has pretty successfully done it. He's an electrical engineer now. So he'll tinker with music gear and stuff like that.
Oh,
so
cool.
That's cool to watch. But he's ended up going actually more into like teaching these days. But yeah, that's always been something I've been intrigued by. So that's really neat.
And tell me more about the, so what's interesting, talking to like a lot of artists, like not a lot, but a few artists this year after starting this, many of whom, you know, I'm always fascinated by kind of the hustle, you know, and
yeah,
like the gigging and everybody's now, it's like you're a t-shirt merchant,
yeah,
you know, to make money or whatever. And so some people doing kind of random stuff, you might be doing the most random thing, which is coffee roasting.
Yeah.
So does that, I guess that might tie into your biology interest.
It totally does.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when lockdown happened,
yeah,
I missed going to coffee shops cause I've always really loved coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But I really missed the coffee culture, and I was like, well, all the stuff I make at home is just not that good. Let me just get better at it, I guess. Cause I got all the time in the world on my hands now. And I had actually gotten my brother a book about home brewing, and he never read it. So I took it back. And I was like, I'm going to read this thing. So I read it cover to cover. And when you really start getting into the mechanics of coffee and the brewing process, the different variables that change the outcome, it's very scientific. You have a bunch of different things. So there's agitation, time, heat, the grind size, which is surface area, the roast level, just and how they all work together, pressure too, which I guess was technically agitation. But you know, it's like when you start to dissect all the things and you only adjust one thing at a time and see how it changes stuff. I mean, you're literally just drinking an experiment every day.
That's amazing.
And I totally went down the rabbit hole, like completely. And so once I got a lot better at brewing, I was like, well, what if I back up a step and start getting into roasting? So a lot of roasters will start with a popcorn popper actually and just go like stovetop with it.
Okay.
Do not recommend doing this in your house, by the way, because there's a little papery, you know how like peanuts have like that papery lining that you have to kind of like take off.
Mm-hmm.
So coffee beans are the same way, and it's called the chaff. And when you start to roast it, it can actually catch on fire and get really smoky. So don't do this inside your house if you're trying it for the first time, especially. So I took like a little camping stovetop burner, brought it outside, brought the popcorn popper. I started getting into roasting, and I was like, dude, this is fun. This would be so cool to do as merch because everyone sells t-shirts.
Right.
And I was like, I wonder how I can figure out how to scale this. And as things started opening up post-COVID, I started getting way more involved in the coffee culture in Orlando, which honestly, after traveling more around the country, Orlando is popping when it comes to the coffee culture. I had no idea how good I had it until I left.
Okay.
No shade to Colorado. Just saying. but there's some cool spots in Colorado too. It's just there's a lot less of them.
Yeah.
But I ended up meeting a really awesome roaster who goes by Cuppa. His name's Landon. And I was like, dude, I've been thinking about trying to scale this up to like a production level where I can have inventory for a tour. And he was like, I have an industrial roaster, like, let's talk. So
nice.
He actually does the roasting on my behalf now, but we'll meet up and talk different types of coffee and varietals and roast levels and profiles and stuff. And like, so right now we have a seasonal roast for spring that's like a lot fruitier. And then we have like our flagship roast, which is just a Guatemalan. And it's awesome. Like that one's a little more like a normal coffee. Like I would say it's like, think of like your favorite diner coffee, but it's the hotter older brother.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
You know, it's like, there's a little more nuance.
Well, it's Guatemalan.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you can't be, you can't be mad at it. But yeah. So anyway, that's, I honestly can tell you though, it was one of the best decisions I've ever made on a whim. It kind of was just a passion project and I wanted to see how it would go. And I was fully prepared for it to like totally tank.
What's the name of the brand?
Jitter. Jitter Coffee Roasters.
J-I-T-T-E-R?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But honestly, I can tell you at shows and when we've been on tour, we sell more coffee than anything else now.
That's amazing.
It's so weird. And it's so fun. I love talking about it with people because it's like, it was like totally my hyperfixation. And I know way too much about it now.
Is this part of your ADHD?
It totally is.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, you know what else I found out is... a lot of the time people with ADHD, when they drink coffee, they don't get the jittery feeling from it because it hits you in the same place as like stimulants do. Mm. And so a lot of the time I'll drink coffee and actually get sleepy afterward, or like just kind of like zen relaxed. And that's how I'm able to drink so much more than my brother.
Oh my gosh.
And it's like, it's so weird.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I've never tried stimulants though, so I can't like give you an accurate comparison. Yeah. All I can tell you is that it like, it does quiet me down sometimes.
Okay.
Which is totally not what you would expect it to do.
Right.
But yeah, like.
That's so cool.
Yeah. It's again, fun little science thing.
No. Yeah. That's neat.
Yeah.
You're both. Yeah. Both sides of your brain.
Yeah.
Active. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
good. Well, so obviously Ted Lasso is one of my favorite shows. Another show that I love that I need to watch more of, although it kind of stresses me out, even though it's hilarious, is Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I have never actually watched that.
Okay. Well, I mean, it just ended, I think, but I just came back from a trip overseas for work and, you know, you can watch stuff, you know, behind the, you know, at the seat. And I watched a few episodes and it was funny because one of the plot lines in one of the later seasons is Larry David, the main character, starts this rivalry with this guy that runs a coffee shop called Mocha Joe.
Yeah.
And he's like, Mocha Joe, I'm going to put you out of business because he got into some fight. He's always fighting with somebody.
Yeah.
But the whole premise was, how can he put Mocha Joe out of business? Well, he leases a place right next door. But Mocha Joe's like, Larry, you're not going to put me out of business because it's all about the beans.
Yeah.
He's like, you can't. He's like, I've got the best beans.
Yeah.
Is that true? Like in terms of coffee, like is it all about the beans?
Oh,
because you mentioned a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, well, it's a perfect storm of a lot of different things.
Yeah.
So yes, you do need to have good beans, and they need to be roasted well and not burnt.
All right.
I'm not gonna name names, but we all know the big chain that burns the beans.
Ooh, yeah. Throwing shade.
Yeah,
all right,
a little bit. You know,
yeah, all right.
little bit.
Love it.
Once you start to like actually support small businesses, you will notice the difference, I promise.
Yeah.
And you're going to spend about the same amount of money, honestly. Right. Give it to real people. Just my
Jitter,
tiny...
What's your website? Jitter?
Oh, actually, it's just on my website.
All right.
It's catridgeway.com.
All right, perfect.
Yeah, it's in the merch tab. But yeah, as far as like getting a good cup of coffee, yes, you have to have good beans. It has to be roasted well. And then brewing it. Because I can't tell you how many times I've had... a coffee that was like brilliant at a place, and then I've bought a bag, and then it takes me 4 or 5 cups to get it to the same place. And that whole process is called dialing in, because every single roast of bean that you're going to deal with is going to have a different nuance, and you're going to have to like adjust certain variables to get it to be optimal. So like the older a bean is, or the darker it's roasted, the coarser you want the grind, because it extracts faster. And so like if you've had the same bean for, you know, a couple months sitting on your counter, eventually you're going to have to start adjusting the grind size to account for the time it's been around. Right. And so like if you have baristas or staff that aren't aware of how to like flow with the bean, it won't be as good. And like, I don't know, I've definitely had coffee at like very swanky coffee shops where like the barista definitely didn't know what was going on, and you can taste it. Yeah, like, yeah, you know, you can tell. But then there are some places where it's freaking awesome. And that's where I honestly feel like the brew method's like the most important thing. Cause even if you have like a not as optimal roast, I feel like there are things you can kind of counteract that with when it comes to the different ways you can brew.
This should be your TED talk.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah. I mean, like I said, like I know way too much about this now. I'm actually going to be hosting my very first cupping in a couple of weeks, which is going to be really cool. It's like the coffee equivalent of a wine tasting.
Yeah.
And that's going to be really fun. I'm excited for that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before you got into coffee, obviously you've, I think, grown up playing music, learning music and stuff. But you have, in speaking of kind of cool connections, you have a connection to like the Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell us about that.
This right? Dude, I'm telling you, this is
another example.
Yeah, this is another one of those weird full circle connection things. But when I was probably 13 or so, this was when let me back up even a little more. So when I'm in 7th grade, I want to say, which would have made me like 12 or 13.
Okay.
I showed my parents one of the first songs I ever wrote, and I remember my dad being like, "Wow, that doesn't suck."
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, "Cool." You know, I thought it was pretty cool too. And
what was the name of it, you remember?
Yeah, it was called Parachute.
Okay.
And so I showed that to my parents, and they were like, "This is really cool." And I happened to live about, I don't know, 10 minutes from a recording studio. It was GRP Studios, and the guy that owned it still owns it. They've just moved, but it's called Greg Reich Productions. And Greg, he's worked with all sorts of people, Deep Purple, Little Feet, and he was actually one of the studios where Britney Spears and some of the early 2000s pop boom got recorded in Orlando. So he's done a bunch of stuff. And so my dad was like, "You guys should come see the studio." So he just got us in there, because my brother was also really into music at this point. And so he lined stuff up with Greg. We went and toured the studio, got a look at all the gear. Neither of us knew what the heck anything did, but we were just like, cool. And so a little bit after that, Greg opens up this open mic series called The Music Cafe, and it was every single Tuesday. And I went and played that open mic every week religiously for probably a couple of years. And I tried to have a new song written every single week, and I kept up with that for so long. And it's like, now I'm like, how did I do that? But I was in it. And eventually my dad and Greg got to talking, and they're like, "You know, you should maybe like record a song." And so I end up recording my very first song at like 14 with Greg. So I guess I played the music cafe for like a year.
Yeah.
And then we ended up recording. And so that was just nuts. And so one thing leads to another, and then Greg is like, "Hey, is this what you want to do?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Okay, well, I'm gonna help you start building your resume now, so by the time you're able to start gigging more consistently, or like by the time you get out of school, you actually have a reason for people to want to book you." And I'm like, At the time, I did not realize how big of a solid he was doing
me. Yeah, that's a huge.
It's massive. Right. And so I was like, okay, you know. And so he had this series where they were filming like living legends coming in doing live sessions. And so I'm 14, 15, opening for Bill Payne of Little Feet, Marty Balin from Jefferson Airplane, just like all of these dudes. And I fell in love with all of it. But at the Bill Payne show, there was another person on tour with him named Dennis McNally, who was touring behind a book that he had written. And so he gets to talking to my dad back in the control room. I don't know where I was off doing something. And so dad starts talking to Dennis, and Dennis is like, hey, you know, I'm actually the former publicist for the Grateful Dead. And my dad's like, cool. You know, and that his book that he was touring was all about his experiences working with them and how he did the work that he did with them. And so they start talking, and then Dennis is like, look, I know Kat's really young right now, but whenever you feel like the time is right and she's ready, give me a call. And he gives my dad his card. I didn't know any of that happened until I was like 23, and my dad's like, or 24, I guess. Right. And my dad's like, hey, because I had just gotten the masters back for Nice to Meet You. And my dad gives it a listen, and he goes, okay, I have something to tell you. And I'm like, what? And he's like, hang on. And he's digging through his desk like a mad scientist, and he finds this card. And he's like, do you know what this is? And I was like, no. And and he's like, this is Dennis McNally's card. I kept it for 10 years. Sweet. And I was like, what? And he tells me the whole conversation I didn't even know happened. And so he's like, let's call him. I'm like, okay. So we call him, and we're not even expecting him to remember us or anything, you know? And my dad's like, hey, Dennis, you know, I'm glad this is still your number. you know, I don't know if you remember, but my daughter opened when you were on tour with Bill Payne, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm glad you called. And he boom. I mean, he knew everything. He remembered everything. Sharp as a tack.
Wow.
And he was like, you know, I got to be honest. I'm not really that involved in the industry anymore these days, blah, blah, blah. My dad's like, that's cool. Can I still just send you the record just so you can take a listen to it? He's like, sure. So he listens to it. And then the next day, or no, not even the next day, he calls us back that day, and he just goes, okay, all right, fine. And he's like, I'll help you work this record. And honestly, if you traced everything that has happened in my career back to one person, it's Dennis. And
that's so cool.
Yeah, he's like the godfather of everything we've done. And I love him so much. And he's just the coolest too. Like, we were on tour, I think this was last summer. We're in the van, and he called because he had tuned into a radio interview or something that we had done as a band. And I was like, hey, Dennis, if you have time, like, can you tell us a story?
Yeah, seriously.
And he's like, yeah. So we're all driving in the van, and he tells us this crazy story about how the Grateful Dead had their own plane and their own pilot, and it's actually against like FAA regulations for them to fly below a certain altitude in Colorado, like in the rocks. But the pilot kind of did it anyway because it was just like an unbelievably pretty sunset. And he's like, and I'm just on this plane, and Jerry's over somewhere babbling on about all the movies that were filmed. Because it was like, where was it? I want to say it was like Sedona, like old Hollywood, basically. Okay. It was like one of the old, where tons of old films were
like
set.
Old Westerns?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Jerry's like babbling off in the corner about all the movies, and no one's really listening to him. And one of the other members of the band like had a really young son, and they sat him in the pilot seat, and he was flying the plane for a minute.
Oh, shit.
And like, you know, what else? Like, he was just like pretty much just telling us what everybody in the band was doing. And he was like, and it's just one of those memories that's burned in my brain, because it was just everyone being so 100% themselves in that moment. It was just beautiful. And then you look out and you're in the middle of these rocks, and the sunset is like the same shade of orange and red as these rocks. And it's, I was just like, that's insane. But the way he told the story, man, it was just so, I feel like I have that memory now, you know? Right. But yeah, he's just the freaking coolest. I adore him.
No, that's, well, the thing that strikes me about that story too is between Greg and him, you know, I hear a lot about, especially like in technology, you know, women are trying to have opportunity, right? Yeah. And I think it's improving, right? But, you know, technology has been male dominated forever.
Yeah.
I'm sure music's been male dominated forever.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they were so proactive in, you know, Greg giving you, you know, the shot, and then Dennis, you know, being so impactful. That's really cool for like a young woman, right?
Yeah, no kidding. I, you know, and I've thought a lot about this because I definitely have had my own experiences of facing prejudice and sexism in the industry. But honestly, I feel like the amount and severity of those instances has been so much less than other folks that I've talked to. And I don't really know why. But I am very grateful for that. And I've been very, very lucky to be surrounded by a lot of really great men. And I'll bring it back to Mike, Tall Tall Trees, my co-producer on this last record.
Okay.
Is such a champion of women in the industry. And he doesn't do it to be, you know, like, I'm a feminist. Like, right. He's like, those words have never come out of his mouth. And I don't think they ever would, you know, but like, he's one of the first people I hear say, have you listened to this band? Like, oh, she's such a badass. And like, when we're in the studio, he's teaching me how to do things as we're going along. And I won't lie, like in the studio before, I've been in different situations, whether I was playing as a session player or whatever, where, people I was working with in the studio, they were like, oh, well, like, yeah, Kat, you play guitar, but like, let's get a real guitar player in to come track this or something, you know, like little, the microaggression,
right,
kind of stuff like that. And I'm like, I mean, I play guitar for a living. I think I'm kind of a real guitar player. Like, I definitely am less of a lead player than a rhythm player, but like, I can get the job done, you know, give me a couple passes and we're good. But anytime I would find myself kind of falling into the patterns that other people had built for me, where when we were in the studio, you know, I'd be like, oh, Mike, because he's an insane guitarist, banjo player, like everything, anything with strings, he's a magician. And I was just like, yeah, like, do you want to track that? I'm sure you're gonna come up with something way cooler. And he goes, no, this is your record.
Oh, sweet.
You're gonna play on your record.
Oh, sweet.
And I was like, oh. But then it was like, he was very, like, he had such a guiding hand in all of those moments too, where he'd be like, hey, like, when you play this lead line, like, try like bending into the note instead of just like hitting it or whatever. And so it was like, you know, I felt like I was being held in very good hands the whole time. But again, it's just, I actually had this conversation with a couple of my bandmates and some of my friends, like, as I was working with Mike, I was like, I don't know if I've ever had this type of energy from a guy in the studio before. Like, this is like very, very special. I've never had someone empower me that much and be such a cheerleader during the process in like the least cheesy way. Yeah. He's like water. Like, you know, like, it's just very calm and steady, and like the way water erodes a mountain is how he took down preconceived patterns from other people. You know, it was really a really beautiful partnership to work with him on this record, and I'm really excited for people to hear it, because it does feel the most like myself of anything I've ever recorded, and it's because he pushed me to let it be, you know. So I have been very lucky with the men that have been part of my career. And
that's great.
I totally acknowledge that. They're awesome. Thanks, guys.
No, that's good. So in the midst of your Colorado sort of residency, you was it New York City that you did the Lincoln Center performance? And that was about women in Americana.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How did that happen?
That was pretty nuts. That was actually... So through a very crazy, again, like these dots, man, right. They connect. I had been on the lookout for a booking agent for a long time, and I had been given the name of my agent. Her name's Joy. I had been given her name from multiple people, and we just never quite made full contact. And when we started working on this record, I have a new team that's on board as part of the promotion and back end of making the business side, basically, of the record. And they were like, hey, we have an agent that we have in mind for you. And it was Joy. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, man. Of all the people in the industry for you to connect me to, it's her. And actually, we just hit 1 year of working together like yesterday or the day before. Excuse me. And so, like, the first show she gets for me is the Lincoln Center. And I'm like, jeez. Are you kidding me? Like, what? And yeah, so she has a great working relationship with the room. And so she was like, yeah, I got these two other artists I think you would be really cool on a bill with. And you want to go awesome. To New York? And I was like, I always want to go to New York. And so in the middle of the season, I popped over from Colorado and came and played this little, like, it probably ended up being about a week long tour with Lauren Calve and Katarina. And okay. it was a lot of fun, man. It was really cool.
That's neat.
And yeah, hit some really neat rooms. I played the Pie Shop for the first time in DC. And honestly, like, I was not expecting the kind of response that we got in DC, but there was a whole group of friends. One person had seen me play a random house show a couple years ago. That's like so a cool. So Far Sound show, and then brought an entire like team that goes rock climbing together, and then we all like hung out downstairs and stuff. Geez. And it was just like, it's like, I love that shit, man. Yeah. It's the best. It is the best. And anyway, yeah, that's like one of the other memories that really sticks out from that run. But yeah, Lincoln Center, DC, and yeah, it was a really cool run.
Well, I want to talk about your songwriting, but in that performance, and you didn't do it yesterday, which is fine, but most of the time, that's right. Most of the time you're able to sneak in a cover of the Cranberries.
Oh yeah.
Like my friends and I, Rob from Roswell, yeah. You know, he always calls it the Looper.
Yeah.
He's like, is she going to play the Looper? And it's crazy.
Yeah.
Cause it's, you know, it's crazy, but like how much practice did that take to kind of get that down? Because you basically, what is it, five? Is it four or five at the end where you record like live and loop it back? And it's, I don't know what you call it because I'm not a musician, but it's,
yeah,
you basically harmonize with yourself.
Yeah.
Four or five different layers.
Yeah. I think it ends up being about five, and then there might be a sixth on top that I'm just kind of ad-libbing on top.
Yeah.
I'm going to be so real with you. There was just one day my brother and I were playing.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Like, my brother and I were playing a show down in our hometown. There's a really cool venue called Wakaiva Island. And someone asked for Dreams. And I just midway through the song remembered, like, oh, yeah, doesn't this end with that, like, stuff, you know? And I couldn't really remember how it went. But I was like, I'm going to try it anyway because we're among friends here. Like, no one cares that much. It's a cover gig, you know? I mean, like, I respect cover gigs. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, but yeah. I was like, I'm going to take a little risk here. Just see how it goes. And that night, I think it was only like two or three layers. It wasn't anything like that extravagant. But I was like, oh, that was cool. And people dug it. And I was like, huh. So then I just started like doing it at gigs. But I never like rehearsed it. It was more of just kind of a, let me see what happens this time. Because the thing about looping that I love so much is it's like an audio mandala. You know, it's never the same twice. Even if you do the same parts, it's never quite the same. And so there's a spontaneity about it that I like to try to keep, which is part of the reason I don't really rehearse stuff like that as much. And then once I did it a good handful of times live, I did kind of settle into like an arrangement. But again, it changes all the time. Like the bass harmonies are the same.
Yeah.
But then I'll go off on top of it and stuff. And I've done it different lengths and stuff. And, you know, it's like I said, it changes a little bit here and there, but for the most part, I have it pretty down now, but yeah, that's one of my favorite things to cover now. It's super fun.
It always gets a really good reaction.
Thanks. Right? Yeah. You know, I mean, like, it's just fun. Yeah. I mean, come on, the Cranberries, it's Dolores, right? That was her name.
I'm not sure.
I never remember how to say her name, like Dolores Riordan, she's one of the greatest alternative vocalists of all time. And I mean, just to be a tiny little blip of the history of that song and keeping it alive is an honor. Honestly, that song is fantastic.
No, it's great. I mean, and your voice is
thank you,
off the chart too, so
appreciate it.
Yeah All right, so real quick, you're still relatively young, you're not 14 anymore, but you're on the younger side, I guess. What inspires you when you write songs? Is it more on the heartbreak, grief side of things, because which I don't imagine, because you're so happy all the time, but
you know, it's like, funny,
is it love, is it, what is it?
For more recently, okay, so like in the past, yes, it was like a lot of very happy stuff. And like one of the better known songs of mine when we've played at shows and stuff, for people who follow me, is the song Aspen, mm-hmm. Which is just like about being a rambling traveler and stuff. So like it's very sunny, you know? And so when we went to work on this new record, though, I was like, you know, man, I just really feel like I have not said stuff with enough substance, because so much of the music I love moves me because it's real, you know. And I feel like, I mean, happy songs are fantastic, and kind of my artist motto for the longest time was just to be a means of escapism for people. But then I kind of realized, like, is it for them or is it for me? And that was a trip, and I kind of 180'd everything I was thinking about songwriting. And I had, honestly, probably like a string of 3 years that were like the worst of my life, like from 2021 to like, or I guess it was like 2 years, yeah, from 2021 to 2023.
Oh, jeez. And why is that?
One bad breakup, then it was like I got COVID 3 times and mono in between. I got mono at like 26. I'm like, how does that, when during social distancing, I don't know how that happened. But apparently there was like a weird uptick of mono during COVID.
I've actually heard that around here.
That at least the doctors I talked to, which were many, they were like, it could have actually been from contaminated silverware when you first started eating out again. Because everyone's immune systems were just so shot after quarantine and stuff. So I still am not sure how that happened, because I wasn't seeing anybody. But between all four of those viruses, I was in and out of the hospital, and I was having really crazy pain in my side that the doctors could not figure out. And every test, luckily, was coming back fine. I was in, like, at one point I was in the ER like doubled over in pain, and my doctor's like, you know, I know you don't feel good, but you're actually super freaking healthy. And I was like, thank you so much, but please fix me. Like, you know, it was like debilitating pain. And and then the anxiety that came along with just like being in that much pain and not knowing what was wrong was just, I mean, it was just more than my brain could deal with. Cause I mean, I almost passed out on stage a couple times. It was that bad. And so eventually, as a last resort, I end up getting a colonoscopy, because they did a bunch of scans, but never anything internal. And then they actually found precancer. I was like, oh my God. And that was what like really sent me over the edge. And then I was just like,
oh, jeez.
So then I was like, I think I actually have PTSD after all of this. And I actually did.
Did you write some songs based on...
I did. I mean, honestly, like once I started, like I was like, I think I need to go to therapy, like after all of this, because I just like couldn't get out of the cycle of being freaked out about everything all the time, because I kept thinking I was like dying. And so in the midst of that, you know, you start working through all the things you've ever been through in your life. And so this record, honestly, is a lot of that dive that I took And so, I mean, it's the whole record. It's not like a super doom and gloom record. Like, don't get me wrong. There are definitely some happy songs and stuff on there and things that are more contemplative, not quite sad, but like, it's definitely, a more thoughtful lyric compilation than anything I've ever released. I actually think it's the strongest lyricism I've ever written. I'm very, very proud of it.
That's awesome. Are we going to get a Cat Ridgeway breakup song?
You know, I don't think it's actually quite a breakup song. There's a song called Cursive though, which is just me just lamenting the entire time about how bad I am at expressing myself in relationships, because it's like the lyric is like, sometimes when I talk, I just can't stop. What is all this cursive talk I'm caught up in? Can't get a straight answer from me, but it's pretty, isn't it? And it's, know, like that kind of stuff, you know? Right. Yeah. And so it's more of like, just like not being able to say what you need to say or say it well, which is so funny.
In the context of a relationship.
Yes. Okay. And it's so funny because like, I mean, I feel like I'm pretty good with words when it comes to like writing songs, but then it's like, you put me on the spot in a relationship. Like, bye-bye. Like, no. Oh, wow. And so, that song hits me in a nice place. Cause it just, I don't know. It felt like something very specific I was trying to express. And that was actually the first song Mike and I started laying down. And when we got to tracking even just the scratch vocal, we just looked at each other and we were like, dude, like we did something today.
Interesting.
And right. That was kind of the jumping off point for the whole record. Awesome. Sonically. So, yeah. But then there's like another like really dumb song on the record. This, you'll probably get a kick out of this story. So I end up back in Georgia last year because I got invited to be an artist in residence for an art gallery. I was on the road with Abe Partridge.
Okay, yeah.
And so for anyone who doesn't know Abe, he's an amazing songwriter, but he's also a fine artist. And so between the shows, we were stopping in at different art galleries for him to talk about his work that was either already on display or talk about getting it on display at different places we were touring through. So we're in LaGrange. And we end up at this the Cochrane Gallery, and they're inviting Abe to come stay in this little cabin to paint. And then they're like, "Kat, we also have writers. If you ever want to do like an artist in residence thing, you just come up and stay in our cabin. And
sweet.
There's no internet connection, and you can just make stuff all day, and no one's gonna bother you." And I was like, "Yeah, jeez. I need to finish writing for this album. Like, let's go."
Jeez.
So I end up in this cabin, and I'm trying so hard to finish writing these songs and just get in a flow state again, because I haven't really been able to in a while. And so one day I'm like, you know what, send it. And I take two gummies instead of one. And then I'm like, I'm gonna go on a walk in the woods, and I do, and I get completely lost, and I'm like, I done really messed this up. Oops. And so I call Wes, the guy who owns the gallery, he and his wife. And I call him and I'm like, dude, I think I might have gotten lost on your property, which, mind you, is like 50 acres of woodland.
In southwest Georgia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that's the middle of nowhere, by
the way. It is totally the middle of nowhere. Yeah. And I find a telephone tower and I call Wes and I tell him I'm lost. And his response is just, well, shit. I was like, oh no, I'm gonna die. I'm literally gonna die in the woods in LaGrange. And oh my God, what a way to go. This is so, my parents are gonna be so mad at me. Like, you know, like, this is the dumbest thing ever. And anyway, so then he's like, let me give the phone to my wife. So he puts his wife on the phone and she's like, hey, Kat, do you see where that rusty bridge is? I'm like, yeah. She's like, you see that one slat that's sticking up a little more than the others? I'm like, yeah. If that's to your back, you're walking the right way. And I'm like, those are some backwoods directions if I ever heard
that's
them.
Awesome.
And so I follow them and I'm losing reception on the phone and I'm freaking out. And I just keep walking because I'm like, if that slats to my back, I'm going the right way, you know? And so I finally find the cabin and I realize I was never more than 50 yards away from it
sweet.
The whole time.
That's
and
hilarious.
I'm like, dude, this is classic. And I just keep thinking, though, like, if parallel universes exist, I definitely died in those woods in at least like five of them. And I can't get my head out of that cycle. And so I wrote this song called What If, and it's just stupid. And it's actually, I think it's hilarious. That's now. Awesome. But knowing like the anxious place it came from and how now the song is like so funny to me is so poetic, you know, and like legit. And I love where the song ended up too, because again, being on tour with Abe so recently, I had a lot of like bluegrass kind of stuff in my head from the way he played banjo. And I loved the way the bluegrass banjo had a melody to what was being played. It wasn't just chords. Like, it was like an actual thing you could hum back to somebody. And so I wanted to come up with something that melodic that also had a vocal melody sitting over it. And so I wrote this thing, and then I showed it to Mike, and I was like, dude, I really like this thing, but it's way too bluegrass. I need us to get it out of like Yeehaw Town. And he's like, okay, well, we just don't make bluegrass decisions. And so it ended up being like really weird. I don't even know how to explain it, but it starts off with like a little 80s Casio keyboard like preset, just like, yeah, it's really cool. But yeah, so anyway, in sum, yeah. Yes, the record's definitely a lot deeper than anything I've put out, but it's definitely also like, it's not just like sad.
Yeah. Well, good.
Yeah.
When can we expect that?
We're hoping for October, but like definitely fall.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a fall record. It feels like a fall record.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, so not to like get into too much detail, but bad breakup. Are you dating? Like, is it hard to date when you're in Colorado or like on the road all the time? Like,
I am in a relationship at the moment. Yes. Right. But it's honestly, it's been really chill. It's been very, very easy.
Okay, good.
Which just, you know, that's when you,
I would imagine it's hard to, the schedule's always jacked up.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Making time for each other, definitely high on the priority list. Yeah. You know, I have to try, which, as I've gotten older, I realized like, oh, like effort is needed, you know? When I was like in college and stuff, I was just like, oh, I'll see you when I see you, you know? Like, and to be fair, that was kind of the energy I was receiving back. Yeah. So it's like now I'm a little bit older and, yeah. So, I mean, it's been pretty easy. Yeah. But yeah, I definitely have had to like be intentional with my time and how I make my schedule and make sure that things are on the calendar before tour dates and stuff start filling in all the gaps.
Do you have an ick?
No, not really.
Really?
I just like, I don't know.
Most women have like the most random icks, you know?
I don't know. Yeah, I hear people talk about the ick, and I'm just kind of like, what do you mean? Like, do you like this person?
Well, it's like, you know, it's like,
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm like really in the minority here, but I just like, I've never like resonated with the ick thing.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I mean, honestly, if I'm being real, it's like, if someone actually gives me an ick, I'm like, we're breaking up because like, clearly like this
well,
isn't
the point. Yeah. That's the point. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I guess like just, lack of reciprocity is like not a, I mean that, but I feel like ick is more of just like, well,
an ick is like he wears flip-flops,
yeah,
you know, like, yeah, you and know, like, it's like, I just, it's like, yeah, random stuff. Yeah,
right. No, I don't know, like, right. I've never felt that way toward anyone. I'm just kind of like, you do you, like,
that's good,
you know, it's, you're a whole ass person, like, if you want to wear a flip-flop, wear a flip-flop. I don't know, like,
that's a great answer, by the way, because the yeah, it's like they get hung up on like the dumbest things.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, I mean, in my past couple of years of therapy, I feel like a lot of this is just like getting hung up on something as a scapegoat for either insecurity or like a like an underlying perfectionism type of thing.
Yes, I love that. What a great answer.
And it's like when you have that, it's like, okay, well, why does something that insignificant actually bother you that much? Like, back it up five steps. You know?
Right.
I don't know.
That's a good answer.
I don't, not to get like too cerebral on it, but
I love that.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. I've just never, that's never been something I've experienced, but that doesn't mean it's not real.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's good. All right. Well, so last question.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time. I guess, what are you most curious about?
Ooh.
Cause you're obviously curious about coffee.
Yes.
And biology and all the things, but like what, Yeah.
I am the most curious about where music is going to go. In the way of what is a sound that we haven't heard yet. Mm. Because one of my favorite records of all time is Bon Iver's 22 A Million, because that was the only record in my lifetime where I heard sounds that I had never heard before. Because I came into the world after the revolutions of the 70s, mm-hmm. of the 80s with technology entering into music and, you know, all of these different inventions that were tied into sound. And so I constantly do wonder, like, what's the next genre that's going to be born, and what's the new sound, like how the 80s brought electronics into music? Like what's the next thing? That's what I think about a lot.
All right. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your time.
No, thank you.
Can you play us some songs from the new album?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Kat.
For sure.
So this is called What If.
If parallel universes exist, how many versions of this life have I lived? And how many other different people have I been? Would every choice I've ever made need its own universe to play out in? I've always just kind of believed, if you can think it, it must be somewhere out there. I've always just kind of believed, if you can think it, it must be somewhere, if not here. If everything I've ever thought really exists somewhere, oh my God, you won't believe the things I've seen or all the crazy ass things I've heard have occurred, or all the stupid ways I died, but that somehow I survived in this life. I'm alright. Sometimes I get carried away living my other lives. I'm terrified. But for each tragedy, there's yet another scene to rectify. So use your mind, but be wise. And I know it's dense, but really ask yourself, what if? What if? Hey, welcome to a world of possibility. There's a billion and one and another 93. And I don't know how I got here, but I did, you did. Welcome to a world of possibility. There's a billion and one and another 93. And I don't know how I got here, but I did, you did, we did, we did.
This song is called Sprinter.
Lay the assignments behind on your rent. Text to your friends, be there in a minute. Dishes piled up high. Dry clothes still on the line. Still got that
damn check engine light. Out of groceries, but it's fine. Never made up the bed. Out in public with wet hair on your head. But then you only had shots when you were out at the bar. And you had a person in the backseat of your car. You were a track star, a sprinter, you never ran far. Hey, hey. Nail polish outgrown on return calls from home. Meeting postponed in your own time zone. Too many emails unread. That check engine light's still burning red. Shots on shots in the back of the bar. And the upper's hidden in the back seat of your car. You were a track star, a sprinter. For the month that dragged on in a couple days, in a clouded haze. Stop and go, then the red lights run, pedal through the floor, engine blows and roars. You might be long gone now, but you check engine light.
Thanks so much for joining us for another episode of Curious Goldfish. Please follow and subscribe to the podcast and on social media. Also, tell your music-loving friends about us too. Until next time, stay curious.